Hello everyone, welcome to the Australian CISO, a podcast for current and aspiring CISOs and anyone who has an interest in cybersecurity. My name is Richard. Hi everyone, thank you for joining us on our continuing journey to becoming the Australian CISO. This is episode 6 entitled Updates, Breaches and Out and About. First, let me go through a few matters before we get to the main topics, which will be breaches and a lunchtime cyber get-together I attended during the week when I was out and about. I'm using a new microphone, the Rode NT USB Plus. Hopefully you won't hear any degradation in the sound quality. I've also nutted out how to record a podcast with people when they're not in my proximity, i.e. over the phone, so that means the 10 or more people who have been earmarked to be speakers can now be catered for. We have completed 5 episodes of the Australian CISO podcast, and I'd like to thank you all for staying on the journey and those lovely comments that are coming through. I do subtly repeat certain messages. When I did an MBA over 20 years ago, one of the interesting things I read is that you typically need to repeat a message 7 plus or minus 2 times to get the message through. So thinking about security awareness, you may need to repeat your message 5 to 9 times to let the messages sink into the audience. Quick shout out to the effervescent Mercury. You know who you are. This subtle repeating of the message 5 to 9 times directly relates to some of the feedback you provided me yesterday. Thanks for the feedback. Feedback really is a gift. Drop the ego, hear the feedback, and embrace it. A great way to improve your work or your approach to other matters. For those of you who are statistically minded, the episode with the most plays and downloads was episode 3, Lessons Learnt from a Red Team, Blue Team Penetration Test. It was popular as it provided many handy hints to further raise the bar in your security environment. The feedback I received regarding the recommendations were along the lines of brilliant, simple, but I'd never considered this, and hey, I feel like you've done a penetration test on my environment without actually doing a penetration test. For those of you old enough to remember the old TV commercial of the 1970s, I think that may be referred to as a Clayton's test. The test you have when you're not having a test. Given that good feedback, I urge you all to listen or re-listen to episode 3. Certainly worth the listen. What has surprised me is where our listeners are located. We've had listeners from Australia. No real surprise there.
No!
New Zealand, the UK, the US and Canada, Spain, India, Indonesia, Malaysia, Netherlands, and another country which my father referred to many times as, don't cry for me, Argentina. I am both amazed and happy to have a listener from Argentina. I wonder if it's Gabriella Sabatini. Happy birthday to you, Gabriella, in a couple of months. If you are listening, I'm sure you are. And I was really surprised that we have listeners and downloaders from the Republic of Ghana. A big hello to my one listener in Ghana. Fun fact about Ghana, according to factinstitute.com, in 1991, Ghanaian Ferdi Atto Adobe set the world record for the fastest 100 metres run backwards. He ran the 100 metres backwards in 13.6 seconds. Well done, Ferdi from Ghana. And the last country people are listening to from is Russia. Hello, comrades. Now, we've seen more breaches this week, and it's great to see how the security community has come together in an attempt to help those affected. It was heartwarming to hear that I wasn't the only person to make contact and offer assistance to a CISO from one of the most recent data breaches, not to interfere, but just to let them know that I was there to help if they needed it. Security people do have a fascination about the specific details of data breaches. We just want to know because, one, the board and our staff will want to know exactly what happened. In fact, many boards expect a one-pager every time there is a breach. We want to promote security awareness, not inhibit it. So as a security person, you need to keep up to date to answer questions from your staff and your board. Two, we want to learn from the latest data breach, i.e. how did the attackers get into the environment? What methods did they use? How were they detected, etc.? And we need these details because we want to make sure our companies aren't susceptible to the same attack. Having said all that, we security people have the ability to read between the lines and nut out exactly how the attacks occurred. We also tend to move around a bit, so if you've ever worked at a large employer of security staff, such as one of the top four banks or Telstra, you're probably going to know someone who works at the breach company who might subtly confirm your suspicions. Security people do have a strange fascination for all things security and data breaches. Long gone are the days where it was name and shame. Security people just don't do that. We all realise that despite the best controls in place, it can be really hard to fend off every attack. As we all know, sometimes it can be one person having a bad day, in a rush, or just tired, clicking on a link. And it's not always the company's fault either. Sometimes it can be something that you wouldn't typically imagine. And here's an example. Imagine a transport company that has a breach. Initial reaction, who cares, because the transport vehicles can still deliver the goods, right? No. Think about it some more. A transport company relies on a delivery document that lets the driver know where and when to deliver a product. If that transport company has a breach, and say all the servers are encrypted, the flow-on effect could be having no delivery documents. No delivery documents. That's going to be affecting a lot of organizations. As we saw in the December 2013 breach of Target US, quite often it can be the actions of the third party that can place our company in peril. A typical example is the reliance on a managed service provider who unfortunately gets breached. That not only affects the MSP, but potentially all the organizations the managed service provider manages. So the flow and effect of a data breach in any organization can be very, very significant.
Yes.
That flow and effect results in a case of two for the price of one, but not in a good way. Another issue is the internal workings of an organization. If the board have decided to cut costs to meet their targets, and some of those costs were originally slated for the security team to uplift their security, then sorry, you can't hold the security team to blame for that. In fact, you probably can't hold the executive to blame either. These decisions are made daily in every organization based on a risk approach. What's the inherent likelihood? What's the inherent consequence? What controls do we have in place? Thus, what's the residual risk we are looking at? These decisions go against us, but it's not our risk. It's the risk faced by the organisation, and they make the risk-based decisions, not us. We may not like it, but it's not our money. I think it's as simple as that. Security people also seem to have an issue with the media's use of the words sophisticated attack. Look, most of the people that listen to this podcast eat, live, and sleep security. We understand how attacks occur, who perpetrates them, and why they occur. The media doesn't. They think it's a group of young people wearing hoodies in a dark room with the glare of the screen reflecting on their face. We know that is not true, but the media does not. So give them a break. Have a little chuckle when you read about the next sophisticated attack, but just leave it there. It really doesn't need to be repeated all over social media. And on social media, stop attacking companies that have been breached. They're under enough pressure already. They don't need a further hassle online. We are a community. We're better than that. As I've said before, as a team, everyone wins. We all win together. I've one more thing to say about breaches through the use of a small story. Back in 1999, I was living in Sydney and my unit was robbed. I had double deadlocks on the doors, locks on the windows, and what we'll call monitoring from a community within the block of units. We all looked after each other. I was the victim of a robbery. The perpetrator was never named because the perpetrator was never caught. I was never blamed as I had employed sufficient controls to protect the unit. So let's align that with the data breach. Companies get robbed or breached despite having what we will call double deadlocks on the doors, locks on the windows, and monitoring. The company is the victim, as are its customers. Same as the house analogy, right? There's a difference. The difference is that cybercrime is the only crime I know of where the victim is also given the blame for the attack. Why? The victim is the victim. We all try and put good detection and prevention mechanisms in place. We all have monitoring in place. We all have good hygiene practices in place. So why breached companies keep getting the blame for being attacked is hard for me to understand. That is, assuming they've got reasonable controls in place. Again, back off them. Most companies and security people really do try their best. They're passionate about their responsibilities. We're always on at night, weekends, and holidays. Just give them a break. They're doing their best. And on that note, that's probably the last you'll hear about this topic from me for quite some time. Now, I was out and about this week, and I took the opportunity to attend a luncheon get-together hosted by Qualys that included one of their customers as a presenter. The event was titled Melbourne Cyber Risk Management Briefing. Why did I attend? As mentioned in a previous episode, it's all about networking. It's not about the product itself. It's all about keeping up to date with technologies, hearing what speakers say, meeting new people, and catching up with other attendees who I might bump into there. I did bump into Veronica, who I worked with in a past life. She is one of the best risk managers I've ever worked with, and I really hope I can get her on the Australian CISO podcast at some stage. Heads up to you, Veronica. The Cyber Risk Briefing was held on Tuesday, March 14, 2023, at the Grand Hyatt in Melbourne. Attended by approximately 30 people, speakers included the CEO of Qualys, Sumedh Thacker, and Eugene Ostapenko, who is the Head of Information Security, Risk and Compliance at Illion, Australia and New Zealand. You may know Illion by its previous name, Dun & Bradstreet. Both speakers were very informative, and I'll try to give you a summary of what they said. Sumedh initially summarised what many of us know. Everyone is facing similar problems, breaches, and how hard it is to keep up with the patching of vulnerabilities. But then he gave us an insight into the digital economy. The last 15 years, we've really seen everyone and everything entering the digital economy. Every business is competing on the digital experience. In many industries, customers aren't interacting with us in a store anymore. So how does a company make sure their customers are accessible online? He cited a great example of Netflix. When you purchase a new TV, there's Netflix on the TV as an option. They are already in front of you more than, say, another provider who may not be an option on the TV. Sumedh mentioned something that I wasn't aware of, and that was the countries in the UAE and others are leapfrogging technology via technologies such as QR codes for payments. When he said this, I had a visual of when I was in India in 1998 walking through markets using my Indian rupee to buy items. Now, I suspect from what Sumedh said, there are probably millions of these sellers now selling via the use of digital payments using QR codes. This technology would have changed the lives of many, many poor traders in countries such as India. What a great technology. Without it, most of these market traders would have been placed in the category of digital exclusion. Then Sumedh moved back into the security topic. With more people studying coding, more tutorials available online, and more coding tools out there, there are now millions, billions, trillions, zillions of lines of code out there. With so much code being developed, it's just got to contain vulnerabilities. We can't fix them all. So what do we concentrate on? The integrity of code is just so important. Otherwise, we'll have to go back to manual methods, and I don't think many of us want to do that. Sumedh then gave us a quick realization about the digital world we live in and the inherent security issues. So imagine a bank robbery. When you rob a bank, it's linked to that branch that you are robbing, or we'll call it attacking. You walk through the door, you take the money from that branch, and you escape. You've affected that branch. Now, a breach is significantly different. You don't have to be physically there. You connect to an organization located anywhere in the world from anywhere in the world. You just don't affect a small subsection of the organization. You affect all of the organization. It really is getting difficult to protect every single presence that you have online. What are all our assets? To what extent are they all at risk? What controls do we have to protect them? Are we confident in our controls? Have we tested them? All questions that we really need to answer using very limited resources. And with hundreds of patches needing to be released to our environment every month, how do we ever catch up? The conclusion was that we need a risk-based approach and some sort of risk score to keep us honest. I don't have a problem with that. My only problem is with some frameworks that judge your maturity in categories of level 1, 2, and 3, for example. You can have every control in level 2 and level 3, every control in level 1, which is seen as the sort of beginner's level, but every control in level 1 except one of those controls. And you know what? You get classified as level 0 for that control because there is one missing control from level 1, despite having all the requirements of level 2 and 3. So if you do use metrics for scoring, just be careful of which ones you use and add an explanatory note if your score is low in one particular area. It kind of reminds me of that old saying by Mark Twain, the three kinds of lies, lies, damn lies, and statistics. So objectively, not having one of the measures in, say, level 1 maturity, but all the rest are in level 2 and 3, gives the reader the impression that your controls are not up to scratch, when in reality, I believe they are. Sumit then left us with four main points to consider. What do I have in my environment? This has to be the number one consideration. You've got to know this before you patch. You just can't patch what you don't know is in your environment. Two, what is my current risk? What are the important assets? Are they all exploitable? Focus should be on the current risk. Number three, how do I fix it? You'll obviously need a plan of attack for that. And four, am I protected after I remove or mitigate the risk? I.e., are all assets using an endpoint detection and response capability? Are they all on SIEM, for example? Smed then raised an interesting point which shouldn't be interpreted as an infamous underarm delivery, and that is this. In Australia, we use the Essential 8. In New Zealand, it's the Critical 10. What do they know in New Zealand that we don't know in Australia? Personally, I've never investigated New Zealand's Critical 10, but I think it could be worthwhile. We may even get a guest from New Zealand to discuss it with us. I'm thinking of you now, David C., if you're listening. Insurance was also mentioned by Sumed, as was automation and the speed to react to a breach. The second speaker was Eugene Ostapenko, who told us a great story of how his company, Ilion, used Qualys to solve some problems they'd faced. Eugene also talked about the challenges we all face, the increase in inherent risk as more data is generated, the increasing nature of system complexity, how post-COVID introduced many new challenges, how technology is increasing and improving at a great rate, but it certainly brings new risks with it, and how we're all facing cost reduction measures. Eugene spoke very well of his journey and his company that he's been on with Qualys and summarized it as follows. Approximately 5% of security resources were freed up to undertake other tasks. Engineers' time had been saved. There was definite saving in penetration testing costs, improved reliability and legacy technology planning. The bottom line for Eugene was that they were able to reinvest the savings to address other risks. And as a bonus, there was better collaboration between departments, security, infrastructure, and development teams. I caught up with Sumed, the Qualys CEO, after the talk, and we discussed having him on the Australian CISO podcast at some stage. Alrighty then, that is the end of the episode. I hope you've enjoyed it. As I always say time and time again, if you've made it this far, I do salute you. And if you can please rate this podcast with 5 stars and click the follow button, that would be greatly appreciated. Remember, any comments or questions, send them to theaustralianciso@gmail.com. That is theaustralianciso@gmail.com. Before we close, I wish you all the best along your journey to becoming the next Australian CISO. Remember, it's all about people, process, technology, and partnering with others. Until the next episode, it's bye for now.
This podcast is written, produced, and presented by myself, Richard Herron, and hosted on Podomatic. Any statements I make are my own or have been attributed to the originator. My personal views are mine. They do not necessarily reflect the views of my employer. The podcast is recorded using Audacity, using a Rode NET USB Plus microphone. The music is provided by Pixabay. The music is called Pluck Loop 91 beats per minute.